trust in institutions and brands is at an all-time low, you could argue.
We talk about why more leads is usually the wrong problem to focus on.
You don't have to compete when you know who you are.
We also get into how AI fits into marketing the right way as a tool that accelerates good strategy.
One of the great lines I've heard in this regard is, imitate and then innovate.
This episode will give you a much clearer framework for how to think about marketing going forward.
Desperation, neediness is a repellent to success.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
Today's episode is for contractors who feel like they're doing marketing but aren't really seeing work, because there's a big difference between running marketing tactics and running real marketing campaigns. My guest today is Zach Garside, president of Prolific Brand Design and one of the clearest thinkers I've talked to when it comes to branding, email marketing, and what actually drives results in home services. In this conversation, Zach breaks down why most contractors stay stuck doing one-off emails, random promotions, and evergreen coupons, and why that approach almost never creates momentum. We talk about why more leads is usually the wrong problem to focus on, the difference between tactics and full campaigns, how to plan marketing around goals, deadlines, and capacity, why urgency and clarity outperform discounts every time, why email marketing still produces some of the highest ROI in the trade, why branding helps you stand out in that world flooded with AI-generated content, and why knowing who you are as a company matters more now than ever. We also get into how AI fits into marketing the right way as a tool that accelerates good strategy, not something that replaces it. If you're tired of copying competitors, running the same offers everyone else is running, or feeling invisible in your market, this episode will give you a much clearer framework for how to think about marketing going forward. Let's get into it. What's up, everyone? This is Mauricio Cardinal. I'm the host today. I want to welcome Zach Garside. Welcome to the show, Zach.
Thank you very much.
Super excited to have you on. We had a great conversation last time when we spoke. And I'm really excited to talk about some of the things we talked about. I think a lot of people can learn from your experience working in the space.
I appreciate that, Mauricio. I'm excited.
Yeah. So you said that there's a big difference between running marketing tactics and running real marketing campaigns. How would you explain that difference for a contractor?
Oh, yeah. Great question. So a marketing tactic is any one thing that you do, like you publish an email or a social media post, or you run a direct mail, or so like the one postcard, right? Those are tactics. And I believe that in the home services, we've way over indexed on individual tactics. And we need to get back to the art of the campaign. A campaign is a collection of tactics that work together to achieve a goal by a deadline. So it's not one email to sell new water heaters, for example. It's six emails, three social posts, a blog post, a video, and two radio ads selling your water heater restoration package before the deadline that homeowners have to take action on it. We just don't really do that often in the trades. We have these kind of evergreen coupon offers, I like to call them, that we put out there, like $59 water heater tune-up or $59 furnace tune-up. And we just let them run forever. There's no deadline. There's no urgency. There's nothing really unique or special about it. And that's really one of the tests for whether you're just relying on tactics or you're running actual campaigns. If I were to look at your marketing efforts, does it look like you? Does it look unique? Or is it something that literally everybody else is doing too? And I think right now we've got a lot of companies who are all doing the same thing. They all run the same specials, the same promotions, the same coupon offers. And it's very rare to see a company do a full campaign. When we do email marketing campaigns with clients, for example, you know, we go 2 weeks, 6 to 8 emails, hard deadline, very detailed promotion. Like, it's not just get a new roof or get a new air conditioner. There's all these details on the financing, on the pricing, on the inspections that we do, on all the details of the service. And you have until the deadline to take action on it. And we typically see much better results by putting a deadline on it and turning it from some commodity offer like $100 off a new furnace or $59 tune-up to something really unique that stands out, that's branded and that literally nobody else is doing. So that's the difference between tactics, just doing one thing off the cuff and saying, oh, well, we sent an email, but it didn't work, and campaigns, where you combine many emails, many posts, many ads together to achieve a goal by a deadline.
Yeah, I think it comes down to also a lack of planning, strategy, and execution, right? So it's basically those kind of those three things. If you're not really thinking about this and planning it out, I find that a lot of companies that are, I would say like the, you know, 10 to 15, $20 million range, or even above, or yeah, it could be, there's, I find companies less doing less than 5 million and doing it well, but overall, just companies have kind of thought about it, you know, more consistently and actually plan out their year, right? So they plan out their year. So they're the fourth quarter of last year, they're already planning out the next four quarters of this year, right? So they plan it out and they have their, hey, this is my first quarter, second quarter, third quarter strategy. And obviously the trades is, and you know, roofing, HVAC, plumbing, they're all seasonal. It's a very seasonal type of campaigns. And what I find is a lot of contractors, they said, I need more leads. I need more leads. That's like the surface level type of problem they have. But it comes down to a lack of really planning, strategy, and execution. And that's kind of the thing that I find. And then you're right. So that's a great thing, tactics and a strategy. And how do you plan out campaigns typically? I guess it depends on the trade. How'd you plan it out?
Yeah, it always starts with what's your goal? You got to have goals in your business. I know a lot of people say, oh, well, I don't have goals. I focus on habits. No, you got to have goals. So we always ask a client, hey, what are your goals right now? What is it important for you to sell over the next 30 days, for example? Client will tell us, we want to sell more air conditioners, or we want to sell more roofs, or we want to sell more water heaters. I'm like, great. What's your capacity? Okay, let's put a number on this thing. Like, how many roofs, how many air conditioners do you want to sell by February 14th, let's say, for example. So I'll like workshop it with you right now. Let's say you own a business. You say, I want to sell more furnaces because it's January and February 14th is the date we're going on. Okay. And you say, we want to sell, you know, 20 furnaces between February 14th. I'm like, all right, great. So we want to sell 20 furnaces by February 14th. Now we have a very specific goal. We have a short time frame, 2 weeks. Let's put together a campaign. When you go out and sell a furnace, first of all, tell me about your process. Help me visualize what it's like when you go out, sell, and install a furnace. Now, one of the three great rules of copywriting that I've learned from a guy named Harry Dry is when you put together a campaign, you got to answer three questions with a yes. Question number one is, can you visualize it? Question number two is it falsifiable? Like, can you actually prove that what you're saying is true? So anytime a company says we're the best, or we're number one, or we're the most trusted, that's not falsifiable. It's totally subjective. Anybody could say that. But let's say something specific that can actually be proven right or wrong. So can I visualize the process? Is it falsifiable? And number three, can anyone else say it? We want to say something only you can say. So I'll ask them to walk me through their process. Customer calls, says they have a heat problem. What do you do? What do your technicians do? What do your trucks look like? Are they clean? What's the process the technician follows in the home? Is it a 10-point inspection, a 15-point inspection? Give me the details. When he presents options, how's he doing it? Is he sitting across the table? Is he sitting next to the customer, shoulder to shoulder? Do you guys present financing options? Tell me about those. Are there any rebates available? Tell me about those. What is the price range? I know nobody likes to give prices, but customers want prices. And my philosophy is, let's be the company that answers the questions no one else is willing to answer. So I get all these details, and already I'm ahead of anybody else who wants to do a campaign to sell furnaces, because what are they doing? Get $100 off a new furnace. That's it. That's their whole campaign strategy. But now I've got 14 furnaces by, or 20 furnaces by February 14th. I know the full process. I can help customers visualize what it looks like for this company to come out. I can say things that are true or false, not just subjective, oh, you were the best or we're most trusted. And we're gonna say something no one else can say. So I'll give it a name, right? Like, again, I give the water heater assurance package, or we'll do the 21st century furnace offer, okay? Like, let's bring your furnace into the future, okay? We want it to be on brand, but we're gonna give the offer a name, And then we'll come up with all the, if there's any specials or bonuses. Are we going to give a discount? That's one way to make it enticing to act. Are we going to add bonuses like a new thermostat when you get the furnace installed? There's got to be something extra, something that gives them a reason to act before the deadline. Because they could buy a furnace at any time. They could buy a furnace in March. Why should they buy it before February 14th, though? What's the incentive? What's the bonus for doing it before that particular date? We want to come up with what that is. Again, could be a discount, could be some bonuses that you add on, like a year membership, a new thermostat. We'll get your thermostat in perfect settings so that you're not waking up at 3 a.m. wondering why it's so cold in the house. New air filters for a year. The only limit is your imagination. And then once we got all that together, we structure a campaign in three phases. Phase one is the launch. Phase two is the details. And phase three is the deadline. And typically it's like a U curve. You ever seen a graph where it's shaped like a U? So phase one, you get a spike of sales. Phase two is where the dip of sales happens. And phase three is where sales come up again. So in phase one, we're just announcing the offer. No fancy sales psychology, no copy ease and all kinds of tricks. It's just, here's the offer. Here's the details. Here's how to take action. That's all we're doing. Again, nothing clever, nothing fancy. Because our mentality is that there are people on your list, there are people in your market who are ready to buy this offer right now. You don't need to convince them. You don't need to give them all kinds of fancy tricks. Just present the details as they are. So that's the launch phase. The details phase is where we give people things to talk to their spouse about. Talk about energy efficiency, talk about how qualified your technicians are, talk about how they're drug tested and background checked, tell stories, entertain, give them content that's insightful and fun to read or watch. This is where people are really thinking about it. And then we have the deadline phase. This is where we hard sell. This is where we let people know, hey, it's February 12th. You have 48 hours left to take advantage of the 21st Century Furnace offer. On February 14th at midnight, this offer is gone. You no longer qualify for the discount or bonuses. You no longer qualify for all the add-ons. This offer disappears, and you got to stick to that deadline. This is where you see your next spike of sales because people know we got to act or this thing's going away. But that's how we do it. What's your goal? What are the details? How can we make this irresistible, different, and create a sense of urgency? And then launch, details, deadline. We run the campaign. Once it ends, we check back and see how do we do? How many sales do we generate?
And typically, how do you execute on that in terms of do you use the customer's email list, right? How do you execute on that? What are the actual tactics? How do you execute? Do you use emails? What kind of email tools do you use for email service providers? Like talk more about that.
At our agency, we do email. That's what we specialize in. But we do the same thing for ourselves when we run promotions. And we'll leverage our email list, obviously, because that's where the best at, honestly. We leverage our clients' lists when we do it for them. But you can run this across as many channels as you want. Again, the limit is your imagination. So obviously, you should do your list because you already have those leads. But you don't have to get new ones. They're already sitting there in your business. And I can make a whole case for why contractors should be emailing more. But email list, you could do social media, you could do radio, you could do pay-per-click, you could do on your Google business profile, you could do a post about this offer. You could cross-promote with other local businesses like, hey, we do plumbing. Our friends across the town do window cleaning. Let's partner together and let their customers know that if they act for the 14th, they can get a new furnace from us. And we'll give a kickback to the window cleaner, right? So there's infinite channels you can use. On email, the most common tools that we use are ServiceTitan Marketing Pro and Constant Contact. If somebody has Marketing Pro, it's very seamless to get in there and get started. If they don't have Marketing Pro or another platform, we like to set them up on Constant Contact because we've had a really good experience with that platform. They just have great deliverability, good customer support, and they're super easy to work with and send emails from.
Typically, what is a CTA? Is it just a call, schedule a call, or just a call? Like, what is a typical CTA for that?
I like to rotate call to actions. If you do the same CTA again and again and again, people get bored, they know what to expect. So I typically rotate between three different types of call to actions. Number one, book online. So you have a link to a book online form. Number two, call. So there's a phone number that they can literally just call. Or number three, reply to the email and a member of our team will help you get all the details. I like to rotate between those three, sometimes include all three in the email. The reason I do that is because when people are checking their phone or looking at their email, you got to think about the context. If all you're giving them the option to do is call a phone number, you're not going to get the best response because not everybody's in a position to call you when they're checking their email. Like, we're talking about people who are at work procrastinating, who are just chilling at home, families around, there's kids, there's too much noise. People are checking their phone on the toilet, in traffic, I mean, in line at the grocery store. Those are not great places to make a call. But I could easily click a link and book online. I could easily reply and say I'm interested and I want the details. So those are the three primary call to actions that we rotate between during an actual campaign. If we're not doing a campaign and we're just doing one-off broadcasts to build the relationship and entertain, then we can do those call to actions, and we can send them to videos on our YouTube channel or Facebook. We can send them to other content. We don't even have to put a call to action, right? We can just have the email be the content itself if our goal is to nurture the relationship. But the rotation is healthy. I think if you have the same thing again and again and again, people know what to expect. They get bored. They tune out. And boredom is the death of the sale. We want to avoid boredom at all costs.
Yeah. So you typically have three forms of communication. That's how you do it. And that's how you kind of get the sales coming in and get the people, at least the opportunities coming in, the leads, right? They come in, right? Awesome. Yeah, that's good. That's really good stuff, because I think that's very valuable. And typically, how many emails do you send, and what is the time frame? Like, is that February 14th? That's really like in 3 weeks. How would you structure that? How many emails would you send through that time?
If I was gonna have the deadline be February 14th, let's see, today's the 28th, so I would probably start it on the 2nd, February 2nd. I'd have 2 weeks. I would send somewhere between 6 and 8 emails, depending on the brand and the email list. You know, some email lists are used to getting emails from a brand more often, so I'd increase the frequency a little bit. If it's like, hey, we haven't emailed our list in 4 months, then probably going to dial back to like 4 or 5 maybe, because the email list hasn't shown itself to be willing to receive that many messages from you. There isn't a hard rule. You should send this many emails during a campaign or in general. It's all about the relationship. I mean, think about the relationships in your life. You don't have a hard rule for every single person in your life and how often you're willing to contact them or ask them for help. It's case by case. You kind of do a little mental audit of, all right, my neighbor Joe, I need a favor from Joe. You know, what's our relationship like? You know, can I just make a call to Joe and he'll say yes? Hopefully. But if not, because you haven't invested in that relationship, you haven't talked much, you haven't done anything for him, you know, you kind of got to think about your communication strategy based on what the relationship with the person is like. You don't communicate with everybody the same way. So that's always the first thing that we really want to try to understand about the business when we run campaigns is, what is your relationship with these people? With some businesses, it's like a locally owned small company. A lot of people in town know the owner. So we'll send an email and immediately there's a great response because people see the name of Pete, the owner of the local plumbing company, reach out and they say, oh my gosh, Pete, long time. Other times it's kind of a faceless, nameless brand that people don't have a good relationship with. And if you send an email for that company, it takes some warming up. People don't automatically trust or even remember you when you show up. So it's all about the relationship when you're determining how often and how many emails to send.
You would recommend then sending it from the owner, like just acting as one person instead of, it could be a really big company, but it'd be just one person. It would be like that. Would you recommend that? Or?
Yeah, I like sending it from a person, like a face of the company. Be it the owner or a marketing manager or somebody else. But like, I like having a face of the company that we can use. Not every company wants to do that approach or is even right for that approach. There are a lot of businesses out there who just want to be the business. They don't want to have a person attached to it. And I understand that too. It changes the approach a little bit, because if it's a person that we're writing as, then we can infuse it with lots of personality and humor and that, you know, that person's quirks and characteristics and traits. If we're writing as a business, there's a little bit more trust building that has to happen. People don't inherently just trust a company. They trust people a lot quicker than they trust brands. So it changed the approach a little bit. You have to be more patient with the results, I found, but still works. It takes a little more.
Yeah. In your experience, why does doing more marketing really fix marketing problems?
Doing more?
Yeah.
You know, I've always been the type to say, let's just go out there and do stuff and find out what resonates through action. That's not everybody's approach, but it's mine. And I like it because I find out what people resonate with quicker than just theorizing about it or pontificating on it and brainstorming. I really don't love brainstorming sessions most of the time. Sometimes you can get a brainstorming session going and it's amazing. You're coming up with so many great ideas. But I personally get ideas from going out and doing stuff in the market. Like, hey, let's try this. Did it work? No, it didn't work. Okay, why not? I don't know. Let's try something else though. Hey, that did work. That resonated. We got a lot of response, liked that message. We got sales. Let's try something similar to it. So I just think that you build a relationship faster by going out and doing things. I think you figure out what resonates with the market faster than if you're just brainstorming on it and pontificating the whole time. And we live in the nature of the economy, if you will, right now, and marketing in general is, again, people over brands. Trust in institutions and brands is at an all-time low, you could argue, of the last 100 years. And trust in people, just like random individuals, influencer types, is extremely high. You could argue that the last presidential election in the US was decided by a couple of podcast appearances, right? Legacy media doesn't have nearly the same pull it used to. Big brands don't have nearly the same influence that they used to. And I think people respect and appreciate someone who goes out and does stuff, even if it's imperfect, because we're all clinging to humanity, especially with, you've got AI out there. When someone says, hey, look at this cool post I generated with AI. I'm like, yeah, awesome. I can also run a marathon in my car. Like it's not the same. You might get the same output. Like you finished the race, you got done. But the process of getting there is something that humans appreciate still. And that includes flaws, that includes quirks, that includes spelling errors, that includes all this human weakness, if you will.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second because we had a good conversation regarding AI, and that's a good analogy. I like that. It's you can run a marathon, but it's still 26 miles. You could do it in the car. It's the same output, but not the same way of getting there, which is a really good way of thinking about it. Yeah,
it's not the same experience, and I think that is one of the great competitive advantages right now. What is the nature of the experience that you're creating for people? Not just, did you get the sale? But did you create an experience that's worth talking about and that's worth coming back to? Most business owners that I know mistakenly believe that the reason someone became your customer in the first place is the same reason they will stay your customer over the long term. And that's not true. That's not how it works. When someone comes and does business with you the first time, it's because they had a problem, they needed it solved, and they needed it solved fast. Most of the time, that's the logic. But the reason they stay and do business with you again and sign up for your membership program and tell their friends and family about you is because of the experience that you created for them. It's the personality of the CSR that served them on the phone. It's the personality of the technician that went out to help them. It's the timeliness and helpfulness of the texts you sent and the email reminders and the email communication, and it's the 5-star reviews and it's the website, and all these things wrapped together create an experience. And that's ultimately what creates loyalty, not the low price, the how quick you get out there things that maybe cause them to do business with you to start. So I think that by outsourcing all of the to things like AI or, you know, automation, there's a place for all of that. Yes, of course. But let's think about what earns loyalty, not just what gets a quick buck.
Yeah. You talk a lot about identity. Why is knowing who you are as a company, your identity, the starting point for effective marketing?
You don't have to compete when you know who you are. If you know who you are and what you stand for, the question is, how do we go out and live this? How do we go act in such a way that only we can? You know, for example, there's this great company that I love called Liquid Death. Are you familiar with these guys? Most people at this point are, which is crazy. They sell water, but they're like, it's metal, right? It's in your face. It's not drink water, it's murder your thirst. They have this very distinct brand, this way of doing things that only they can. They don't wake up in the morning and ask themselves, what would Dasani do? What would Aquafina do? What would these other big water companies do? It doesn't matter to them what other companies would do. What matters is, how can we personally with the way we do things, go out and sell water today. And I think the same thing in home services. Like when we do brands, we do logo design, truck wrap design, brand strategy. Companies come to us and they say, oh, you know, my competitor just did a rebrand. We want to stand out more. Or we just hit a big milestone and we think our brand needs a refresh. So the first thing we do is find out who they are. Who are you at your best? Who are you at your worst? What's your core belief? What do you want customers to say about you? What's your brand's personality? There's 12 personality types. One of them is yours. And once we figure all that out, now we can create a logo that doesn't just look good, it looks like you. Now we can create truck wraps that don't just look good, they look like you. And we can give you language and behaviors that you can take to the market that are one of a kind, that if anybody else even tried to duplicate it, they would come off as obvious copycats. Right? They couldn't even attempt to copy you or swipe your tactics, because what you're doing is a reflection of who you are, not what's working now, like people like to say. Again, all that stuff has a place, but the foundation is who are you, what do you stand for, right? And everything else kind of comes out of that.
And I think it's becoming more important in the age of AI, because it's, we're going to talk about that in a second, but AI has made content very easy to produce. It's created a lot of slop and it's created a lot of information. So information is very cheap. So how, you know, before I have like a saying now, like I've been doing this for a long time, right? Before is in the home services space, you would need, you know, a good amount of Google reviews, right? Nice website and LSA, right? And that would be sufficient, right? 5 years ago, that would be a really good result. If you get consistent reviews every month, LSA, you could spend, you know, a lot of money and you would get high quality leads and stand out. Now that's really just a starting point. That's really just a bare minimum. And really, if you don't have a brand, if you don't stand out in other ways, then AI is really going to skip you over. They're not going to really even reference you, right? Having reviews and having all that stuff, it's just a bare minimum. It's still obviously very important, but if you're not standing out in a way I like to do it, it's like you have to, before you would consider yourself a HVAC company or a roofing company that sells HVAC or sells roofing, you're a marketing company that does that. Now I would kind of rephrase it and say you're a media company that sells HVAC, right? And if you think of yourself as a media company, then you're creating content. You're thinking of the brand, right? You're thinking about the brand. You're thinking about how to attract a certain people. And that's really the shift that's happened, especially with AI. That's the way I look at it. You know, I don't know if you look at it the same way. That's the way I look at it. And that's really the starting point, right? What makes a brand effective, right? What makes a brand effective between somebody that's not effective versus someone? What makes a brand effective today is in the home services space? What's an effective brand? What does it look like?
You made some great points there. And to answer your question, I'll kind of piggyback off some of it. You mentioned Google reviews. You mentioned LSA, a great website. All that stuff is crucially important. Again, it comes back to the distinction, though, between the reason someone comes in the door in the first place and the reason they stay over the long term. And I think great brands know how to do both. They know how to get people in and they know how to keep them. They know how to earn the loyalty. LSA, Google reviews, website, all that stuff positions you so that when someone has a problem, they will find you, they will do business with you the first time. But brand is the long term. Brand is building loyalty that outlasts just the first visit. Brand is when you're driving down the freeway and you see a truck that makes you do a double take at 75 miles an hour. It's having one technician come out and give you a quote, another guy come out and give you a quote, and another guy come out and give you an experience, and you're done calling. There's no one else to reach out to because you've just had a one-of-a-kind experience. An effective brand is one of a kind. That's the best description I could come up with. It's not like anybody else. It's not like anything else. It stands out on its own. It is its own world, if you will. And you think beyond just getting them in the door and you think about, how do we make them stay? How do we make them loyal? Because I don't know about you, but as a business owner, I live and die by keeping my customers, not by my ability to go out and get new ones. The ability to go out and get new customers is crucial, of course, and you have to have that component, but life is so much easier. Life is so much less stressful and quite frankly, more enjoyable when you're keeping customers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%. What do you think a lot of contractors kind of end up copying other other brands. It's kind of a copycat. You see a lot of copycats. What do you think that happens?
The first thing is not knowing who you are in the first place. Like, again, it comes back to, I don't know how I would do things. We don't really know our own style well enough. So let's just do what is working. You know what I'm saying? And that's not necessarily like bad as a starting point. One of the great lines I've heard in this regard is imitate and then innovate, which I think is a good way to approach it. Because when you're getting started, you really don't know, like, man, who are we uniquely in this market? Nobody knows. You haven't been around long enough to have anything to hang your hat on. So there's nothing wrong with imitating somebody. Make it your own. Don't just swipe, copy, paste, and hope for the same results as another company, because you haven't seen everything it's taken for that company to be successful. But there's nothing wrong with imitating what's working in the market, imitating what successful companies are doing. But let's innovate on that with our own flair, with our own personality, with our own approach. And I think little by little, by doing that, I learned a great technique from an email marketing guy one time named Daniel Throssell. He said, find two people in your market who you really want to emulate. Okay, find not just one, but two. So you've got contractor A and contractor B. Your starting point for your brand and for how you approach things should be, we are like contractor A and contractor B, but, and then you have this middle part that's different from the two of them, okay? So I'll give really, really well-known examples just to like kind of make it easy for people to understand, but I'm pretty sure most people who hear this will probably know who Tommy Mello is, okay? So we're like Tommy Mello and Liquid Death, I'll say. So those are the two brands that we kind of want to emulate. Like, we like the way they do things and we kind of want to do things similar. But unlike Tommy Mello and Liquid Death, I am a dad. I have four children. So like we tell dad jokes and we have like a very dad-esque personality. Does that make sense? So you've now got a starting point, sort of a rough place to begin figuring out like what's our brand? How can we be different in the market? We're like Tommy Mello and Liquid Death, but unlike those guys, I'm a dad, I'm a family man. I tell dad jokes and I do silly dad stuff. And you just kind of keep that in your mind as you're developing campaigns, as you're creating offers, as you're going out and doing emails and social and video and creating content to advance your brand. Just think, what would be the best thing to do given that I want to be like Tommy Mello and Liquid Death, but with the dad jokes, with the dad personality. Again, it's not perfect, it's not exact science, but it gives you something to think about. It gives you a frame of reference for making choices that is at least, you know, unique compared to people who are literally just going, hey, can someone give me a template? Right? Can someone literally give me their exact playbook for how they do this?
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about email marketing. Why do you believe email marketing works so well for contractors, even though it's maybe it's not as popular or as sexy as other channels?
Yeah, I'll give you two reasons. Number one, super low cost, super high ROI. Sometimes we get caught up in just the total dollar amount of a channel. You know, we see Google ads or we see SEO or we see some other direct mail generating big numbers. But what we fail to think about is ROI on the channel. And the ROI on email is just crazy. It's, you already have the leads, so you don't have to pay for them. You already have a way to send emails, so you're not paying extra for that. It's just, can you put together a good campaign and generate sales? And the ROI is like, it's incredible, right? We have plenty of case studies of companies who they pay $400 for their email marketing platform. They run a campaign and generate 180 grand in sales in a month. What's the ROI on that? $400 in, $180,000 out. Like, that's incredible. So it's just such low cost, such high ROI marketing. The second thing is you control it. You own the list. People, you know, I've been doing email marketing for, 2018 is when I started doing email marketing. And I've been like, I've seen everything there is to see with email at this point, I feel like. I'm sure there's more that I could be exposed to, but it feels like I've seen everything I could see. And I get all the time, I get people who say, email doesn't work, email's dead. Oh, I'm not really a believer in email. I don't check my own inbox. I just delete my emails, or emails just go to spam, don't they? So people have this weird complex with email, like they're being annoying or it doesn't work, but they have no problem with social media. They have no problem with direct mail, with radio, with TV, with Google. What do all those platforms I just mentioned have in common? You have zero ownership or control over any of them. You have absolutely no influence or control on Facebook. You have no influence or control on Google. You are at the mercy of the algorithm. You play by their rules. And you hope and pray that they put you first on the results and that the customer doesn't get distracted by all the other ads and content. With email, you own the list. If you do it right, you go to the inbox. Once they open your email, there's no ads on the side. There's no other companies posting content on top of, below of, or to the side of your email. When they open your email, that's the only thing they see, your email. The fact that it's so low cost and such high ROI, and that you own it, you control it. It's like the last medium on the internet that you have full control over. Facebook could change their algorithm tomorrow and no one's gonna see your ads. Literally, no one will see anything that you post. Google could change their rules tomorrow, prioritize AI overviews over all other search results, and you're dead in the water, you're hosed. I'm not saying you shouldn't do those things. I'm just saying, why don't you also do something that you don't have to worry about that happening? Yes, hypothetically, email could change. I'm going off of, you know, 25 years of email history where it's been remarkably similar the entire time. It's so reliable. You can't do anything on the internet without an email address. Like, you can't log into your social media profiles without your email address. You can't start your business without an email address. You can't give quotes without an email address. Like, email is the cornerstone of the internet. You should be doing email, period, end of story. Whether you get massive numbers from it or not, it's insanity to me to not be constantly, relentlessly building, curating, and nurturing a list via email. It's just, the reward, the upside is just so high.
Can you walk me through what you did with an HVAC client, forward heating and air? I want to see like the actual breakdown. How do you set up a campaign? What was the offer? What was the timelines? How many emails you sent? Can you walk me through that?
Yeah. What we do first is get you out of spam. Right. Most companies who say, oh, we tried email, it doesn't work. Their emails are just going to spam. But we make sure, this is a little technical, but you got to have a good platform to send emails from. You got to authenticate your domain and you got to warm up your list. So that's some like technical stuff that we do to start, so that when you send emails, they land in the inbox, not the spam folder. And we can get 30 to 50% of the people on your list to open emails. We have a lot of clients who are doing 60 to 70% open rates on their emails. 30 to 50% is like, let's start there. Let's get it to that point. That's successful. The second thing is, over the course of 12 weeks, so one quarter, we will send an email broadcast once a week that is entertaining. And I emphasize entertainment because we're not just sending commodity content like how to change your air filter, three signs that your furnace may be at the end of its lifespan. That's commodity content. Anyone could write that. ChatGPT could write that. I want to write something extremely entertaining. So for example, subject line, please help. And then the email is a message from your thermostat saying the system's being overworked. We're suffering here. The filter hasn't been changed in 6 months. We're running low on resources and energy. Please call this company to get us help. So we want there to be some entertainment value to emails, and we do that on a weekly basis. And we kind of build up to a big campaign once a quarter where we do what I mentioned, which is, what do you want to sell? What's your goal? What are the details? Let's put together an irresistible bonus, an incentive, and a deadline. And we'll do that over 2 weeks, once a quarter. This approach, it allows us to build a relationship. It allows us to kind of nurture and prepare people for the big sales blitz, which happens once a quarter. And it's really, really easy to maintain. Like, any company can send a weekly email. Any company can run a big sales promotion once a quarter. We have several clients. You know, we've got a client in Texas, Dial One Johnson. They've been doing it with us for a couple of years. And last time I talked to her, she says we're getting 7x our investment in email marketing back on every month on average. I won't name all our clients' names because I haven't gotten permission from all our clients to share their names publicly and what we're doing with them. But, I mentioned a company that $180,000 in air conditioner sales in a 2 to 3 week campaign, a roofing company, $180,000 in roof sales on a 1 month email campaign, roof sales, like not trinkets. We're selling freaking new roofs, plumbing company.
For the roofing, I'm just curious because I want to break it down by trade. So the roofing company, how big was their list? And what? How many emails did you send for that sales?
For that roof, for that one particular case study, how big was that list? 40,000 people, I think.
40,000 people.
Yeah.
And that list is there. They're basically their customers, or how did they get that list?
Yeah, you get it through service and advertising.
Okay, got it. So there's that list that they developed over the years.
Yeah, we don't do anything with cold lists. Like, I do not help people who buy lists from like list brokers. I don't participate in that. I don't help with that. I don't touch it. I don't like that game.
Got it. So you would get the list, and how many emails and how long would the campaign last?
Yeah, on average 2 weeks. That one particular roofing campaign lasted 4 weeks. It was a little long. We probably could have shortened that one. Because again, it doesn't change the shape of the campaign. Like, again, it's the U shape where you see the sales spike at the beginning when you launch it, you see the dip in the middle, and then you see a spike at the deadline phase. So the length of the campaign almost just like lengthens the curve. So by shortening the campaign, we can shorten it. It's still the same shape, you know? The important thing is, how enticing is the offer? What's the deadline? What are the bonuses? How good is the copy? Copy is the last part, though. Like, people love to get caught up on content quality, but content quality is, if we're talking about the 80-20 rule, right? 20% of the process leads to 80% of the results. 80% of the results come from quality of the list, quality of the offer. The quality of the content is the last 20%. It's not nearly as important as people think. You want to have a really good list that trusts you, that likes you, that you have a relationship with, and you want to have an amazing offer that people feel dumb saying no to.
Awesome. And then also for the plumbing company, I think it was, you said Spartan Club Plumbing. Was that?
That was that's a rebrand case study.
A rebrand. Okay, got you.
Oh, I just said, yeah, we helped those guys do their rebrand, and they doubled sales after rebranding.
Nice. For, let's say you're a plumbing company. I want to set up an email campaign. What offer would you recommend? I guess it depends on the product and service, right? But typically, how would you set it up, and what would you recommend? What would be the strategy, overall strategy for that?
My first thing would be, what is your goal? What's your goal as a business? You got to have a goal. Too many businesses come in like, what should we do? What's your goal? What do you want to achieve?
I want to sell more water heaters.
Okay, perfect. You want to sell more water heaters. What's your capacity? How many water heaters can you take on in the next, let's say, again, I'm going to stick with February 14th. If we start a campaign on February 2nd and it ends on the 14th, what would be a huge win for you during that period of time? How many water heaters do you want to sell?
I say 15.
Okay. So you want to sell 15 water heaters. Could be more, could be less, depending on the business, right? Fill in the blanks for you. All right. Let's walk through how you sell a water heater. If a customer calls in today and says, hey, I need somebody to look at my water heater, walk me through your process. And you know, we could do this on the phone, on this if you want to. But I would want to know, like, how do you book it? How soon are you coming out? The technician. What are his credentials? Who is this person? How experienced are they? Are they background checked? Are they drug tested? Do you have wrapped trucks? Do you have clean trucks? What is it like when you knock on the door, right? Are you ringing the doorbell? Are you knocking? Are you professional? Like, are you covering your feet when you go into the home? Help me visualize the experience. And I want to find out what the experience is for that contractor from the moment he pulls up to the moment he drives off into the sunset. I want to be able to visualize the entire thing. Because it's those little details that earn the loyalty, right? Customers don't become loyal because, oh, we gave a water heater at a good price. They became loyal because he covered his feet. He was so polite. He was extremely kind. He was a great communicator. He presented everything clearly. That's why I like the details. And then once we got the details, I'd say, all right, what are you willing to do to make this offer as enticing as possible? And again, you got two options. We could put a discount on this, or we can create a bonus stack, or we could do both. We could give $500 off, 10% off, or we could give a bunch of bonuses. So if they get a new water heater, they also get whatever bonuses you would attach to the water heater, right? Like, what would you do in this case?
thermostat, I guess. Yeah, thermostat. So basically it's a list, right? 50 water heaters. You're using that information to create the campaign. That's why you're asking those questions, right?
Yeah, because I'm going to talk about those details in the actual content of the campaign, especially when I'm announcing it. That first email is going to say, hey, Mauricio, it's Zach with Awesome Plumbing. Today, I'm announcing our water heater special, and I'd give it a better name than that. That's kind of more branded, but we've got our water heater special. This deal ends on February 14th at midnight. Here are the details. And then it's just a list of bullet points. $500 off. Financing available. 5% rebates if you go through the city after the installation. Bullet point. All the details of that particular offer. If you're interested, call this number or book online and mention this email when the technicians arrive for the deal. And that's what the first two emails will be, probably, is just the details. Just give it to them.
Got it. Everyone is using AI, right? But last time we talked, you said you're critical about how people are using it. What are contractors getting wrong about AI?
Yeah, we use AI. We're not like anti-AI or anything. My philosophy is anytime there is something, whether it's a trend or a technology, anytime something is just so widely accepted without question, like everybody's in on it, I think you should be skeptical. That's just how I kind of like live my life, as if everybody's in on this and everyone thinks it's amazing. I don't know. I think I might be skeptical. It comes back to like, can everybody be wrong? Yes, definitely. Everyone can be wrong. We have seen that many times in the history of the world where everyone's wrong. So I'm just critical of the blind trust of AI. You know, like what is AI? It's literally the average of human knowledge. Okay, so if you go, AI, write me an email campaign to sell water heaters, by definition, it's going to give you a very average campaign. If I'm talking specifically about AI content, if you're just going in like first prompt, taking whatever comes from the first prompt, first of all, we can all tell. Everybody knows you did it. Everybody knows you're writing with AI, right? Your audience knows, your customers know, your colleagues know, your team members know. We all know. We're not dumb. I just think it's lazy, right? Like to go and use AI to kind of compensate for your lack of understanding of the fundamentals of good marketing, good business. You know, if you understand the fundamentals of good business, like that process that I go through to generate a good campaign, what's your goal? What's the deadline? Give me the details. What's the bonus? What are the incentives we're going to create? That's good strategy, all of that. Okay. And if I know the hooks I want to use, like, okay, in the first email, I want to do this. In the third, I want to take this angle. In the fourth, I want to do this angle. Then AI can be an accelerant for putting together all of those actual emails. And on top of that, like I have in my Claude account, I have hundreds of email templates from over the years that are in there. So it will base it based on the style of those previous templates if I use it to create the actual final campaign. But again, the content is so secondary. It works because of all the input I gave it, the strategy that I came up with in the first place, and the fact that I understand the fundamentals of good marketing. And that's my biggest qualm with it, using AI in any capacity, is using it to compensate for a lack of understanding of the fundamentals of something. Like I recently met with a dietitian, and prior to my appointment with the dietitian, I was grilling ChatGPT for a week on like meal plans and food, and here's my lab results from all my blood work. What should I be eating, and what should I be doing, and what should I not be doing, and what kind of workouts should I do? And it gave me all this advice. Do I know anything about like the fundamentals of good nutrition? I mean, I know what the average layman does, but not what a dietitian knows or what a fitness trainer knows. So when I went and met with my actual dietitian, I showed her kind of the plan that I created with AI. And she was very polite about it, but she was like, let's make a plan for you. Okay, knowing the actual fundamentals of good nutrition and what your body needs, like let's make a real plan, okay? Not just a quickly constructed one. So I don't like using it to compensate for lack of understanding of basic fundamentals. I think there are still experts out there that have knowledge that can guide your strategy and your planning. And if you still want to use AI on the output, by all means. But like, it's pretty obvious when somebody's using AI and doesn't understand the fundamentals of something.
Yeah, I think the analogy you use is the output, right? So if you want to get to a destination, you have a goal. You can either, run, if you're running a marathon, and I'm going to actually steal that, run a marathon by running, or actually drive a car 26 miles. It's the same destination, same output, but it's a different way of getting there. I'm actually going to steal that because I like it a lot. And basically I agree with that. I actually wasn't aware about the amount of, lack of understanding when it comes to AI. I think people are using it as a crutch, and a lot of people are just making mistakes in terms of marketing decisions. I think you have to kind of give it more context. And also when it comes to deep expertise, right? It doesn't really, my opinion doesn't really get there, because I use it every day myself with business, and I have my financials, all those stuff. But there's some things that it gives me advice that I know it's not really quite right, because I've spent a lot of time, years really thinking about the business. And I know I have more knowledge for sure than the AI. And so it gives me things that sometimes I know, but it's not really insightful. It's like, I kind of know this, it's not really that great. So without that lack of understanding, it doesn't really give you that feedback.
Having access to AI doesn't make you automatically know what to do. And that's the crux of the problem for some other people. It's like, you have this tool, but that doesn't mean you know what to do with it. You still don't know what the campaign should look like. You still don't know what your diet should be. You still don't know what your financials should look like. Until you know what to do with it, it'll just make you look dumber faster.
Yeah. If a contractor feels invisible in the market right now, what's the first thing they should stop doing?
If you feel invisible in your market, I think the first thing you should stop doing is being needy. Yeah, I'll say that. There's a great guy I learn a lot from about email. His name is Ben Settle. And when he talks about branding, he says, you know, your brand should have, there's three things every company should embrace, right? Number one is be consistent. Number two is be authentic. Number three is be not needy. And I think a lot of branding and marketing blunders, quite frankly, come from being needy. The first time I started a business was in 2019, at the very end of 2019. I started a marketing agency at that time doing social media ads for people. I was freshly graduated from college, like literally 6 months removed from college. I had two kids. We lived in an apartment, and I was trying to do this agency thing. And for the first 2 months, I didn't get a single client. I was like desperate. And can you guess? I got needy. I got very needy. It definitely showed on my sales calls, on my outreach, and my marketing. Like, I was desperate. It showed. And desperation, neediness, is a repellent to success. It's a repellent to clients and customers. So if you feel invisible, you feel like nothing's working, just take a second and breathe, you know? Don't be needy. And it depends on the size of the company. Like, if you're a new, small startup, it's just you, go get a job. Like, make it so you're not needy. That's my philosophy. Whatever you have to do to not be needy, do that first. For me, that meant shutting down my agency after 4 months, if you could even call it that, right? Stop trying to be an agency, I should say, for 4 months. And I went back and I got a job that I worked in for several years until I really was like, all right, I'm not needy anymore. I'm not desperate. I can do this now. And then I went out and I had infinitely more success when I first started my business in 2023. Than I did the first time in 2019, because I removed the neediness component. So that would be the biggest thing, I think, is don't be needy. Don't get desperate. Just take a breather. Do whatever you have to do to not be needy and not be desperate. Because when you're not needy, you can think more clearly. You're more attractive personality to people you want to work with. And life's just all around better.
Nice. Awesome. Any last, where do people find you, Zach?
You can find me in all the usual places. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can also get on my email list if you want to see all my wiles in the world of email marketing. That's where I share my best stuff. That's at kit.prolificbranddesign.com. kit.prolificbranddesign.com. We have some free resources there. You can enter your email, claim those resources, and then you'll get all our tips that we share 2 or 3 times a week via email.
Nice. Zach, I really appreciate your time. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Mauricio. It was fun.
All right.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.